Good morning. Once again, my name is Scott McDermott, and we are in a series called Death to Selfie. Now, I just want to make sure I'm not trying to insult any of you, but in case you don't know what a selfie is, okay, we're just going to clarify. A selfie is this cool thing you do with your phone where you take a picture of yourself, right? It's super popular. All the kids are doing it. Let's see if I can get the choir in there. Hey, guys. All right, I'll post that later. So we're talking about death to selfie during Lent, and for a good reason. Selfies are very popular, and we seem to love to post them of ourselves to make sure that people know that we're out doing things all the time. In fact, there are over 1 million selfies posted each and every single day across various forms of social media, on your Snapchats and your Facebooks. People love to take and post pictures of themselves. I personally am not a big fan. I don't take a lot of selfies. I look back in my photos. There were only a handful, but I decided to show you a few, just for fun, of selfies that I have taken and posted. This first one is me. This is in El Salvador on our mission trip this past July. I had woken up not really knowing what it looked like outside my hotel because we had gotten there in the dark. And I woke up that morning and went outside, and this was the view on the back porch, which was pretty nice. That's a good way to wake up in the morning. So I took a selfie. This next one is with me and my dad. My dad had never been in a selfie before, so this was a first for him, and he seemed a little hesitant about the whole thing. The next one is me at Assembly Hall in Bloomington, Indiana. They play basketball there. It's also where they keep their 5 national championship banners. And then finally, this is me with John Wesley. Granted, he's been dead for a while, but this is me with a statue of John Wesley in Savannah, Georgia. He had preached on a church in the square there, and so I was there and happened to take a picture of me hanging out with my buddy, John Wesley. At least I tend to think he's my buddy. He has never met me. What's the common theme with these 4 pictures plus all the other ones that I have posted? There is a common theme, and I looked back through my photos. In every single photo, both selfie and non-selfie, that I've posted, I'm smiling. It seems like an obvious thing. We're told to smile in pictures, but I'm smiling in every single one. And you might be led to believe something that's not true. You might be led to believe, if you only studied my pictures, that I'm happy all the time. And that would be untrue. I'm not happy all the time. You can ask my wife. Sometimes I get grumpy, especially in the morning before I have coffee. I'm not happy all the time, but that's the false impression that I have given to the world. In fact, it's the false impression that I've tried to give to the world. That everything is great, I'm doing great, my life is wonderful, I'm happy. I've tried to sell you on that image of my life, and that's not a true image. Sometimes I'm changing diapers. I don't like that very much. I don't take pictures of that moment. There are lots of things we choose not to share, and it does give a false impression, so that only the people who actually spend time with us understand the real us, where all our other friends on social media, they only get to see what we want them to see. They get to see a false impression. And it has started to create this growing gap between reality and perception, what our life is and what we want people to think our life is. Now, this has always been true. We know that celebrities, for example, often get fancy makeup and hairdo and stylists to make them look great. Here's a picture of Chris Pratt. He's a famous Hollywood actor right now. He was in Guardians of the Galaxy and basically every movie made in the last 3 years. And Chris is a very attractive man. I'll admit that, right? He's a good-looking guy. He always seems perfectly with the 5 o'clock shadow all the time, right? I don't know how he pulls that off. But it's because he has a stylist and a makeup artist and a hair artist and a professional photographer and a professional lighter who make him look good. And if that doesn't work, they can always go back and touch it up with a picture. That's not how Chris looks all the time. In fact, I found this selfie that Chris posted of him in makeup, right? That's also Chris Pratt taking a selfie. He's got the double chin, and all of a sudden the 5 o'clock shadow looks lazy, not cool, right? That is also reality. It's just not the reality that we are used to seeing. So the goal of this series, and I know it started last week, and we're going to go for several more, The goal of this series is that you would let go of the false image of who you are and embrace who you really are. Because we also start to believe the lie that we sell to people. We start to believe that we are who we pretend to be. And I want you to let go of that and get back to who you really are, who God made you to be. So for the next 4 weeks, and I know you started last week, we're going to be continuing in the life of Jacob from the book of Genesis. Now, Jacob is an interesting character, and I want to explain why we're picking Jacob, because we could have picked many other biblical characters who have similar issues. Jacob is very complex. There's a lot of scriptures about Jacob, which is helpful, to get a full understanding of who he is. But Jacob, in the stories we're going to look at today in particular, pretends to be someone that he is not. And I think we do that all the time. And so we're going to use Jacob as an example of what we tend to do. So let's start where we always start, at the beginning. In Genesis 25 is the birth narrative of Jacob. Now it says Isaac, his father, was 40 years old when he married Rebekah, daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean, from Paddan Aram, and the sister of Laban, the Aramean. Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was childless. The Lord answered his prayer, and his wife, Rebekah, became pregnant. This is a common theme in these stories in the Old Testament where they are unable to conceive children. They pray about it, and God answers. So this is the answer. It says, the babies, I want to pause and note that that is a plural word. She got twins. She couldn't have any kids all of a sudden. Twins. The babies jostled each other within her, and she said, why is this happening to me? Which I think probably every woman who's wanted to be pregnant and then gotten pregnant has asked that question. Why is this happening to me? So she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger. Isn't it great when you go to God in prayer asking for some hope and he gives you this? This is not good news. Right? Yes, she's pregnant and she's, I'm sure, happy about that, but she just got the news that her babies will always fight each other and that for some reason, the one who's younger will rule over the one that's older, which is not the way it's supposed to work. It says, when the time came for her to give birth, there were twin boys in her womb. The first to come out was red, and his whole body was like a hairy garment. So they named him Esau. All right, we got to talk about Esau. So he's born first. That's important. We'll talk more about that later. He's red. That's not that unusual. A lot of babies come out slightly reddish. But what is unusual is that he comes out like a hairy garment. I have two sons. One is Caleb. One is Isaac, interestingly enough. Caleb was bald for like a year. He had no hair at all. And then Isaac came out with a lot of hair. But I want to be clear. It was on his head, right? Esau apparently comes out hairy all over his body. So hairy, in fact, that they name him Esau, which means hairy. By the way, these are not creative namers, his parents. You're going to notice that. So let's keep going. After this, his brother came out with his hand grasping Esau's heel. So he was named Jacob. Okay, we got to pause again. They're born really close to each other, which sometimes twins are. So close, in fact, that Jacob is grabbing his brother's foot on the way out of the womb. That's an interesting picture for you right there. He's holding on to his brother's foot, and so they name him Jacob, which means, and I am not messing with you, heel grabber. Look it up. I bet you know somebody named Jacob or Jake, and you get to go to them tomorrow at work and be like, so I learned something at church. Heel grabber is his name. Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah gave birth to them. So it did take them 20 years to have children. Now, these two boys, as predicted by God and as we saw in utero, they do not get along. They are very different boys, as most children are in your family. You'll notice that they're different. These are very different boys. Esau is a man of the woods. He loves to hunt. He loves to fish. He loves to be outdoors. He is rough. He is tumble. He is hairy. Okay? That's Esau. Jacob is the polar opposite. He loves to stay inside with his mother. He loves to cook. He is clean-skinned. he's kind of a homebody and he's a mama's boy. They are very, very different boys, and they do not get along. It seems like from birth until the end of their lives, they continue to struggle. So I want to tell you two quick stories that I'm going to summarize for you. This is the paraphrased version of these two stories. And in fact, I think Patty told you one of these in more detail. So the first is about the story of their birthright. So because Esau is the older son, he gets the lion's share of everything. That's the way it worked in this culture. They didn't split things 50-50. It wasn't equal. It wasn't based on who was more responsible or who they loved more. It was whoever was older, even if it was by 1 minute, they get the lion's share of everything. That includes the inheritance when the parents die, but it also includes two things. One is the blessing and one is the birthright. The blessing is going to be a prayer that the father bestows upon the oldest son before he dies. The birthright, though, is kind of the mantle, the leadership of the family that is passed from one person to another. So the father has this leadership of the family, but when he dies, he is going to pass that leadership on to Esau because Esau is older. Now, Jacob doesn't get either of these things, but he wants both of these things. And he's a little bit conniving and a little bit sneaky, and he figures out a way to get both. The first is the birthright. So there's an interesting day where Esau has gone out to hunt, and he has been unsuccessful. He did not catch anything, and so he's hungry when he comes back home. And he comes in, and there's Jacob cooking some stew. Right, this is me. I'm cooking, okay? He's cooking some stew over the fire. And Esau comes in and he says, "Give me some of that stew. I'm starving." And Jacob's like, "All right, you can have some stew if you give me your birthright." Now, Esau is clearly hangry. You guys know that word? He's hungry and angry because he's not thinking clearly in this moment. And he says, "Fine. What good is a birthright if I'm going to die?" He's a little bit dramatic. And so Jacob gives him a bowl of stew, Esau eats the stew, and that is how Esau gives up his birthright, gives up leadership of the family, which, by the way, if you're in that family, then you are the leader of God's people. And he gives that up for a bowl of lentil stew, which I hope was good. The next story is about the blessing. Again, their father Isaac is going to pray a prayer over Esau before he dies, and that is going to be a blessing upon him, and Jacob wants it. And so one day when Isaac is very old and he thinks he's going to die soon, he tells his son Esau, "I'm going to give you the blessing, but first, go out and hunt and kill me something, bring it back, we'll eat together, and then I'll give you the blessing." And so Esau leaves to go hunt, and that's when Jacob and now his mother step in to steal the blessing. And so they come up with this plan, which seems a little bit like maybe they'd had this in the works for a while. And so they come up with this plan where they want to trick Isaac into giving the blessing to Jacob, but they know that he'll never buy it because he won't mistake one for the other, though he is almost totally blind. So his mother comes up with this idea to put goat skins all over his body so he'll be hairy like his brother, and then maybe dad will do it. And so Jacob goes along with this plan. He puts goat skins all over his body. He goes up to his father and says, "I'm ready for the blessing. Here's some meat that I got for you, give me the blessing." And so Isaac is he's not dumb. He says, "You don't sound like Esau. Let me touch you." And so he reaches out and touches his arm, and it's hairy, so it must be Esau. And so he gives him the blessing. Now, when Esau comes home and realizes what's happened, he's angry. So angry that he threatens to kill his brother. And remember, Esau is a hunter. He has weapons. Jacob believes that he's in danger. In fact, he believes it so much that he runs away and he disappears for 20 years in fear, living in fear. Now, I can relate a little bit to what's going on in this family. See, my family was a little bit like this family. We had some sibling rivalry that went on in the McDermott household. In fact, my sister and I competed about in just about everything. If there was a sport to compete in, we competed in it. I always wanted to beat her. She was a couple years older than me, and so it was part of my life's desire to beat her in anything and everything that I could. And so in second grade, in Carmel Clay Schools back in the day, they had this summer reading contest called the Eager Reader Contest. And my sister won. She won by reading 274 books over the course of the summer. She got her picture in the Indy Star, and she got a T-shirt, right? So 2 years later, it was my turn to be in the Eager Reader contest. I read 275 books by June and never read another book all summer, which drove my mother crazy. Now, I did actually win the contest, and my mom gave me the t-shirt the other day. This used to fit me. Okay, and I have the copy of the article in the Star where I got my picture in the paper. But frankly, I could care less about the t-shirt or about being in the newspaper. I only cared about beating my sister. And that's what I think it was like a little bit in this family. Now let's keep reading because there's more to this story. This was kind of the prelude to what we're getting to. We're fast forwarding to Genesis 32. It says, that night, remember this is 20 years later, after Jacob has been hiding from his brother. That night, Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. After he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Now, this is a weird story. I don't know if this has ever happened to you. This has never happened to me where a stranger came up and started wrestling me all night. I think that's odd. And then it's really odd because it says this. Then the man said, let me go, for it's daybreak. But the man said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. The man asked him, what is your name? Jacob, he answered. Then the man said, your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with humans and have overcome. Jacob said, please tell me your name. But he replied, why do you ask my name? Then he blessed him there. So again, Jacob is alone. Stranger comes up. They wrestle all night. He dislocates his hip, which is not that interesting until I did some math and I realized that Jacob is 90 years old in this story. And then him dislocating his hip made way more sense. So they wrestle. He dislocates his hip. They don't even introduce each other, which is interesting. They wrestle all night and they never bother to say, hi, I'm Jacob. Until the man says, what is your name? And I want to pause here because this is important. Because we'll remember, his whole life, Jacob has been the heel grabber, right? He's been trying to get things that weren't his. Even at birth, he's reaching, physically reaching to take things that don't belong to him. And then through his conniving and his lies, he takes things that don't belong to him. And he even, to his father, misidentifies himself. When his father says, who are you? He tells his father, I am Esau. But now, when he's 90 years old, after having hidden out for 20 years and hopefully learned a little bit from his mistakes, when he is asked, who are you? Which seems like a simple question for us. When he's asked, who are you? He says, my name is Jacob. He finally admits, I'm the heel grabber. I'm the one that's taken things that don't belong to me, but right now I'm going to own up to who I am, who I actually am, not who I pretend to be. I'm not hiding, I'm not pretending, I'm not putting animal skins on. I am Jacob. And then he gets that blessing that he always wanted, but he gets it for himself. Not for Esau. He gets it for himself because he wrestles with God and he overcomes. You see, Jacob got a lot of things that he wanted. He got the blessing and he got the birthright, but he lost a lot too. Jesus in Luke chapter 9 says this, what good is it for someone to gain the whole world and yet lose or forfeit their very self? Jacob got a lot of things. But in order to gain those things, he had to lose part of who he was. He had to lose his identity. He even had to lose the relationships with his family. He lost so much in an effort to gain what ultimately was so little. He was willing even to give up his very self. Because he always wanted to be first, just like me. He always wanted to win. He was always heel grabbing. He was always stew trading. He was always birthright stealing. And we can relate to this because I think we live in a me first culture, a culture where we want to win everything. We don't just want to win. We don't just want to be good. We want to be the best. We want to be better than other people. It's not enough for our kids to be smart. They have to be in the advanced program. It's not enough for our kids to be good at sports. They have to be in the elite travel team. We have to be better than everyone else, it seems to me. And I think that's just like Jacob, that we want to be better. But my question is, what good is it? What good is it if in the process of grabbing stuff or security, we run the risk of losing our very selves? In the process of trying to impress others, we're even willing to sacrifice our relationship with God. And here's my point that I want to drive home to you guys today. God cannot bless the person you pretend to be. God cannot save your selfie. God can only bless you, and God can only bless you, the real you, the one that you go to bed with every night, that you lie there and think about, who am I? Who am I really? That's who God wants to bless. Because you can fool Isaac, and maybe you can even fool yourself for a while, but you cannot fool God. God's not impressed at how you dress or what you say or what you do or how much money you have. He's unimpressed by the number of trophies in your trophy case. God is only impressed by your honesty, your brokenness, your willingness to admit your sin and come before Him as your real self. You can't fool God. And once you admit who you really are, once you admit your real name, just like Jacob finally did, God can give you a new one. Once you're finally willing to come to Him and admit, here am I, then that's when God can give you a new name. Because you remember in the story of the wrestling, the angel, or maybe it's Jesus, we don't really know, gives him a new name. The new name is Israel. And I didn't tell you what that meant. Well, Israel means triumphant with God, which is a lot better than heel grabber. Triumphant with God. He's no longer reaching to be something he's not. He's no longer reaching to take things that don't belong to him. He has overcome as himself. He has wrestled with God and has seen the other side as Jacob. And interestingly, the rest of the way in the story, you would think he would always be referred to as Israel, but sometimes he's referred to as Jacob and sometimes he's referred to as Israel, which is interesting. But at least he was honest. Sometimes he still heel grabs. But he also overcomes. He's triumphant with God. So my question is this. Who are you? Who are you really? Not who do you pretend to be? Not what do you look like on social media? But who are you? And then, once you figure that out, and you take that to the foot of the cross, then you can say, now, who does God want me to be? Because God's never content to leave us where we are. But He has to start with our honest selves coming to Him. Let's pray. Father, thank You for teaching us through the life of Jacob. Help us not to make the same mistakes that he made. God, we have ambition. We have desires. But I'm not willing to sacrifice those for my relationship with You. I want to be real with You. I want to come before You, broken, sinful, honest. Ask You to forgive me. Ask You to redeem me. I know You already love me as I am, even with all my flaws and failures. And so, God, I thank You for that. But I ask for Your forgiveness. I ask You to help me, the real me, to draw closer to You so that You can help me be who You want me to be. I pray this in Christ's name. Amen.